Darkness fell with the dramatic suddenness that is seen only in the tropics, and the stars showed through the gaps left in the high canopy of the storm clouds. Within a short time they were closed by the rolling thunderheads, and the darkness was complete, except for the tiny firefly of light was the lantern on the stern of the Revenge. Mansur leaned on the compass pinnacle and let himself lapse into romantic fantasy, dreaming half the night away without seeking his bunk. Suddenly he was roused by a stroke of forked lightning that flew from the cloud ceiling to the surface of the sea and was followed immediately by a sky-shattering thunderclap. For an instant the Revenge appeared out of the darkness ahead, shimmering in vivid blue light, each detail of her rigging and sails stark and clear. Then the darkness fell over her again even more heavily than before. Mansur jumped erect from his slouch over the binnacle and ran to the starboard rail. In that blinding lightning flash he thought he had seen something else. It had been an evanescent flash of reflected light almost on the far horizon. "Did you see it?" he shouted at Kumra, who stood beside him at the rail. "The Revenge," Kumra answered from the darkness, and his tone was puzzled. "Yes, Highness, she is not more than a single cable's length ahead. There! You can see the glimmer of her stern light still." "No, no!" Mansur cried. "Not on our bow! Abaft our beam! Something else!" "Nay, Master, I saw nothing." Both men peered out into the night, and again the lightning cracked overhead like a gigantic whip. Then thunder deafened them and seemed to shiver the surface of the dark sea with its monstrous discharge. In that fleeting moment of diamond-sharp clarity, Mansur saw it again. "There!" Mansur seized Kumra's shoulder and shook him violently. "There! Did you see it this time?" "A ship! Another ship!" Kumra cried. "I saw it clear!" "How far off?" 2 sea miles, no more than that. A tall ship. Square-rigged. That is no dhow." "'Tis the Arcturus, lying here in ambuscade." Desperately Mansur looked to his father's ship and saw that the telltale lantern still burned on her stern. "The Revenge has not seen the danger." "We must catch up with her and warn her," Kumra exclaimed. "Even if we clap on all our canvas, we will not overhaul the Revenge and be within hail of her in less than an hour. By then it may be too late." Mansur hesitated a moment longer, then made his decision. "Beat to action quarters. Fire a gun to alert the Revenge. Then bring her onto the starboard tack and run in to intercept the enemy. Do not light the battle lanterns until I give the order. God grant we can take the enemy by surprise." The war drums boomed out into the dark, and as the crew scrambled to their stations, a single peremptory gunshot thudded. As the Sprite came about, Mansur peered across at the other ship, waiting for her to extinguish her lantern or show some sign that she had taken heed of the warning. But at that instant the thunderclouds burst open and the rain teemed down. All was lost in the warm, smothering cascade of water. It seemed to fill the air they breathed, cutting out any faint glimmer of light and muting all sound other than the roar of the heavy drops on the canvas overhead and the deck timbers underfoot. Mansur ran back to the binnacle and took a hasty bearing. But he knew that it was not accurate, and that the enemy ship might also have spotted them and changed her course and heading. His chances of coming upon her in this deluge were remote. They might pass each other by half a pistol shot without either being aware of the other's presence. "Turn the hourglass and mark the traverse board," he ordered the helmsman. Perhaps he could intercept her on dead reckoning. Then he snapped at Kumra, "Put 2 good men on the wheel." He hurried to the bows and, through the sheets of blinding rain, tried for a glimpse of the stern lantern of the Revenge. He took little comfort from the fact that he could see and hear nothing. God grant that Father is aware of the danger, and that he has doused the lantern. Otherwise it might guide Sir Guy to him, and he could be taken unawares. He considered firing another gun to emphasize the urgency of the danger, but discarded the idea almost at once. A second gun would confuse the warning. His father might be led to believe that the Sprite had already engaged an enemy. It might alert the Arcturus and bring her down upon them. Instead, he sailed on into the darkness and the torrents of blood-warm rain. "Send your sharpest lookouts aloft," he ordered Kumra grimly, "and have the gunners ready to run out on the instant. We will not have much warning if we come upon the enemy." The hourglass was turned twice, and still they sailed on in darkness, every man aboard straining all his senses for some warning of the enemy ship. And the rain never let up. "The enemy might have sailed on without spotting us," Mansair thought. He pondered the chances and the choices that were open to him. "Or she might have turned to intercept us and have passed us close at hand. She might even now be creeping up on the unsuspecting Revenge." He reached a decision and called to Kumra, "Heave the ship to, and warn every man to keep his eyes peeled and his ears open." They lay dark and silent, and another hour passed, measured by the soft slide of the sand in the hourglass. The rain abated, and the freshening breeze veered into the north, bringing with it the spicy odour of the desert, which was still not far off. The rain ceased. Mansair was about to give the order to set sail again, when a flickering glow lit the darkness far over their stern. It played like candlelight on the underbelly of the lowering cloud masses. Mansair held his breath and counted slowly to five. Then came the sound, the unmistakable rumbling roar of the guns. "The Arcturus has slipped by us, and she's found the Revenge. They are engaged," he shouted. "Ware ship and bring her round onto the port tack." With the night breeze on their quarter, the Sprite tore through the darkness, both Mansair and Kumra straining to coax every knot of speed from her. Ahead of them, the flickering light and rumble of gun salvos grew brighter and louder as they sailed towards them. "God grant that we are in time," Mansair prayed, and as he stared ahead, the wind of their passage in his face brought tears to his eyes. Or it may have been some other emotion. The two persons he loved most were caught up in that maelstrom of shot and flame, and he was still powerless to intervene. Even though the Sprite lay well over and ran before the breeze like a stag hard-pressed by the hounds, she was still too slow for Mansair's heart. Yet the distance between them narrowed steadily, and standing in the bows, balancing to the ship's urgent motion, Mansair was at last able to make out the shapes of the two ships. They were locked in conflict, lit by the muzzle flashes of their cannon. Mansair saw that they were on the opposite tack to the Sprite, crossing their bows at an acute angle, so he called to Kumra to bring the Sprite round two points onto an interception course. Now the range began to close more rapidly, and he could make out the more intimate details of the battle. In the Revenge, Dorian had somehow wrested the weather gauge from Captain Cornish and was holding him off, frustrating his efforts to bring the Arcturus alongside and to board him. But Cornish was blocking any effort that Dorian might make to bring the Revenge before the wind onto her best point of sailing and to run away from his superior adversary. In this formation, the two ships were almost perfectly matched for speed, and the Revenge could not evade the bigger ship for much longer. In a duel of attrition like this, the heavier weight of cannon must tell in the end. However, the Sprite was closing rapidly, and soon she would throw her own weight into the unequal contest. The balance then would swing in their favour, if Mansair could reach them, before the Arcturus grappled and boarded the smaller ship. Closer and closer, Mansair edged the Sprite towards the two ships. Even though his impulse was to rush in recklessly and hurl himself at the Arcturus, he restrained his warlike instincts and manoeuvred across the wind. He knew that he was still shrouded in the night, invisible to the captains and crews of either ship. He must take the utmost advantage of the surprise element. There were many minutes still before he was in position to put up his helm and charge out of the darkness to cross the Arcturus's stern, then to grapple and board her from across her port quarter. Mansair watched the development of the conflict through the lens of his spyglass. Although the guns were firing steadily, the range was still too long for them to inflict telling damage on each other. He saw that a number of the Revenge's shots had smashed holes in her opponent's hull above the waterline. The shattered timbers were bright with fresh splinters. There were rips and holes in some of her sails, and a few spars had been knocked away in her rigging, but all her guns were firing steadily. Opposite her, the Revenge was in no worse a case. In the light of the cannons, Mansair could pick out his father's figure in the distinctive green robes as he directed his gunners. Batula stood beside the helm, endeavouring to milk the last turn of speed from his ship. Then Mansair turned his glass back onto the quarter-deck of the Arcturus. With dread he searched for a glimpse of Verity's tall, slim figure. He felt a small lift of relief when he could not find her, although he guessed that Sir Guy had confined her below decks, where she would have some protection from the screaming roundshot. Then he picked out Captain Cornish's face, red and angry in the glare of gunfire. He was pacing his deck with ponderous dignity, occasionally shooting a glance at his adversary, then turning back to harangue his gunners through the speaking trumpet he held to his lips. Even as Mansair watched, a lucky shot from the Revenge took away a spar in the Arcturus's rigging, and her main course came billowing down across the quarter-deck, smothering officers and helmsmen under its heavy canvas folds. There were a few moments of pandemonium as the crew rushed to hack away the flapping canvas. The fire from her batteries dwindled, and the blinded helmsman allowed her head to pay off a point before the wind as he tried to struggle out from under the sail. Then from the far side of the quarter-deck, Mansair saw Sir Guy Courtney run forward into Cornish's place and take command. Mansair heard faintly his shouts and saw that order was being swiftly restored. He must act at once to take advantage of the moment. He called an order to Kumra, who was already poised for it. The sprite turned like a polo pony and charged out of the darkness. She passed close under the stern of the Revenge, and Mansair jumped up in the shrouds and called across the narrow gap of water to Dorian, "Father!" Dorian spun round with a startled expression as the sprite appeared miraculously out of the darkness so close at hand. "I will cross his bows and rake him. Then I will board him from his port side. Do you close from the other hand and split his force." Dorian's features lit with the old battle madness, and he grinned at Mansair as he waved acknowledgement. Mansair ordered the guns run out as he steered boldly across the Arcturus's bows. For almost 5 minutes, which seemed a lifetime, he came directly under her fire. But her gun crews were still in disarray, and only 3 balls crashed into the Sprite's upper deck. Although they ripped open the heavy planking, and the splinters buzzed like a swarm of hornets, not a single man of the Sprite's crew was struck down. Then he was under the Arcturus's bows and screened from her fire by her own hull. Mansair ran forward as his guns began to bear, then walked back along his battery, making certain that each one was aimed true before he gave the order to fire. One after the other, the huge bronze weapons bellowed flame and shot, then crashed back against their tackles. Every ball struck home. Mansair had cut his attack a shade too fine, and he passed so closely under Arcturus's bows that the larger ship's bowsprit snagged in the Sprite's mizzenmast shrouds and snapped off. But the hulls missed each other by only an arm's length before the Sprite was passed. Immediately he was clear, Mansair spun the Sprite round and laid her neatly alongside the Arcturus. The lids of the gun ports on her port side were still closed, for the Arcturus was unprepared for an attack from this quarter. As the grappling irons were hurled over the Arcturus's bulwarks and the 2 hulls were lashed together, Mansair fired another point-blank salvo from his starboard battery, then led his men across in a howling berserker rush. The gun crews of the Arcturus turned to face them, but no sooner were they locked in the desperate hand-to-hand fighting than the Revenge took advantage of her weather gauge and came gliding in to grapple onto her starboard side. The Arcturus's batteries on that side had not been reloaded after the last discharge, and the crews had abandoned them to meet Mansair's attack. The Arcturus was caught in the jaws of the Barracuda. The fighting raged back and forth across the main deck, but the combined crews of the 2 schooners outnumbered that of the larger Arcturus, and slowly they began to wrest the upper hand. Mansair sought out Cornish and the 2 locked blades. Mansair tried to drive him back across the deck and pin him against the shrouds, but Ruby Cornish was a wily old dog sailor. He came back at Mansair hard and fast, and they circled each other.